51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Richard Hammond, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Good, great to talk to you.
That's very nice to
see you. So, Workshop Season 5 is on the way.
Yes, yes.
Now, for our listeners who haven't seen Seasons 1, 2, 3 and 4, will you explain to us what it is?
Well, it's rather fun. It's watching the slow, inevitable and grinding ruination of somebody you're familiar with off your television screens. It came about because about four years ago, after 30-odd years, I've been commenting on cars, sort of standing on the outside of the industry, if you will, as a broadcaster and a journalist, talking about cars. And then I thought, well, hang on, this is my passion. I love these machines. My grandfather used to build them. So maybe I should be closer into the industry. So I set up a classic car restoration business because I have a particular passion for classic cars. Then I thought, oh, that might make a nice TV show, watching how that goes. Mm. Discovery Plus agreed and they commissioned it and it's now a TV show. But it is at heart very much a real business endeavor. I want to run and own a classic car restoration business that's bringing these glorious, story-filled time machines back to life and preserving them for another generation, which is a lofty and fine ambition.
It is.
You see, 37 years as a broadcaster doesn't prepare you to be a businessman,
as it turns out. Now, just to give people an idea, in episode one, you are restoring Debbie McGee's Mercedes. Is it a coupe? You see, I'm not a petrol head, so if I use wrong jargon, you'll correct me.
It's a Mercedes SL, but it has a hard top on it. So it's a convertible with a hard top on it. And the lovely Debbie McGee, and you have to love the lovely Debbie McGee because you just do. Her dear late husband, Paul Daniels, bought it for her before he passed. And so the car is another example of, it's a lovely classic. It's not especially valuable as a classic. I mean, it is, but it's not massively. It's not like a £500,000 car or something. But it's priceless to her. Mm. And it got horribly damaged in a flood. So she came to us with a budget to say, look, I've got this to spend. Can you restore it for that? And as always, the problem is, customer comes with budget. Their budget, as they hand the job to us, becomes our budget. Mm-hmm. What our guys would love to do is give it back to her as the best Mercedes SL in the world. But that would take many more hours of work than her budget can cover. And those hours have to be covered because the guys have mm-hmm. to be paid. It's their jobs. Yeah. And very quickly, the business would go bust. Yes. So we compromised. We got there. We delivered the car. And it was a real joy taking it back to her and saying, here's your beloved and to you incredibly special car working once again.
And Richard, there's no arguing with your passion for cars. Some people would argue that passion and business aren't a great mix sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those some people could be onto something. Tell them, right? They may well turn out to have been right after all. Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. But it's stabilizing. There's kind of two departments of stories, if you like, that come into a show like this. There's one, the broad, overarching, can Hammond make a business work? Mm-hmm. Can he earn enough money through it for it to sustain itself? That's one set of stories. And then obviously, on top of that, there's the cars themselves, because each classic car, whether it's a multi-million pound Ferrari or somebody's old Ford Fiesta, it doesn't matter. It's filled with their stories, aspirations, hopes, dreams, experiences. Maybe they went to school in one of those cars, or on their honeymoon in one, or to hospital, or whatever. Yeah. These are the cars that matter to them. It's just filled with stories. Every job is just another huge story.
We have something in common when it comes to cars. Not a lot, Richard, but a little bit, in that both our first cars were Toyotas.
Oh, really? What was yours?
It was a baby blue Starlet.
Oh, wow, lovely. Yeah. That's actually quite, that'd be quite cool there. It'd be a great thing to have.
I'd imagine they're a lot smaller than I remember.
Yes, they were not a big car.
Not a big car.
My first was a Toyota Corolla liftback, 1979. The thing is, I mean, this is obviously cars come under are under pressure at the moment because we need to decarbonise. Obviously, nobody wants to damage the planet. The fact of the matter is the internal combustion engine never damaged anything. It's the fuel we put in it. There are alternatives that exist. Synthetic fuel can be made. You can bank renewable energy as hydrogen, combine it with carbon. You can take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. You can make hydrocarbon. That is petrol, and any petrol car can run on it. We can do that already. But with a classic car, even if you run it on ordinary fossil fuel, if you only do a couple of thousand miles a year, which that's what plenty of them do, the carbon footprint of that car, because the carbon footprint of its creation is long in the past, annually from now, its carbon footprint is half that of your mobile phone. So there is still a place for them in the world. And I'm not anti-electric car at all. I'm not anti-change. Lots of things are going to change. And we look into a future of lots of options and alternatives from electric cars, hybrid cars, hydrogen combustion, hydrogen fuel, all manner of things that are already there and are coming. So it's not a story of doom and gloom. It's a story of excitement. And classic cars will have a place in that story.
Speaking of change, so you're in your mid-50s.
Thanks for the reminder. I've briefly forgotten about it, Ray, but I'm now reminded of it. Yes, I am.
Well, I'm 61, so I have a few years on you, yeah.
I've got that one coming up. Yes, carry on.
But changes in your life, and you've had two big ones in the last year. It's been a tough year for you. A divorce and you lost your dad. Does it get more difficult as you get older, do you think? To cope with
No, I think it gets easier. These are the things we're designed to cope with when you get into your mid-50s. Those are the things that happen. And if you've got a support network around you and friends and family, and that's what we do. We all cope with different things at different stages of life. I've been through crashes and made sure I'm determined to make them a good thing. So, whatever stage of life you're in, you've got stuff to cope with. We all have. I look at my two daughters. You know, it's a busy time being in your 20s. Yeah. It's scary to think the decisions you make might have ramifications decades ahead. Whatever stage of life is full of moments.
And Izzy is one of your daughters, and she features in episode one and all episodes indeed. And it looks like she is following you in to television, whatever that might be, social media and cars.
And she seems to be just running away with it.
Yes. How do you feel about that?
I'm loving it. I mean, it's something she came to because she and her sister Willow have grown up around television and cars. There's no novelty in it for them. Izzy finished university with a first in English and then suddenly thought, actually, that's quite interesting what Dad does. And then I don't know what I did do, really. I must have introduced her to someone. I don't know, but now I never know where she is. She's just coming back from Singapore as we speak now, working at the Grand Prix. She'll be off again soon to Monaco doing some more filming. She's just carving her own path, and good luck to her. I can only be supportive. I'll just take a lunch along for her.
It's a nice calling card, though, isn't it? Richard Hammond's daughter.
It probably is, but it also holds her back in a sense because she's got to then get out there and be her own person. Mm. She's very keen to make sure, that's why she races, so that she can have an authentic voice founded on her own experience. That really matters to her, that she's got to be the real deal for it to count. So, it's always fun watching your children get going in their careers, isn't it?
Yeah, as long as they're safe and happy, I suppose it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Back to the workshop. It starts on Discovery. It's season 5. And you are now the boss. You are a businessman. You have to make big decisions. Before, I suppose, when you're broadcasting and you're part of Top Gear or whatever team you're part of, a lot of decisions are made for you. You arrive and you probably have been chauffeur-driven there.
Spoiled rotten, you
exactly,
mean.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the change and the difference is quite huge, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It has been a bit of a step change, but it's enjoyable. It's been fun. I'm enjoying it still. I'm very aware of the responsibility to make the business work. These people working for it, this is their job. They are, they've spent years learning how to be a fabricator, painter, welder, mechanic, whatever. This is, when the cameras go away, it doesn't make any difference to them. Mm. It's important to them that the business doesn't go away because they've got mortgages or rent to pay, and this is their job. So I do take that very seriously. It's not a game. I can't turn around one morning and say, no, I've had enough of this now, I'm going to stop doing it. Well, they can't, so we have to make it work.
And did you do any sort of start your own business course or anything like that?
No, I didn't.
Did you? Ask?
I bought one of those books you buy in the airport about business, and I just got bored. It didn't have any car chases in it, so I gave up.
There's the thing, you see. Now you've put your finger on something. The excitement of, you know, what you did, travelling all over the world, driving fast cars, staying in very nice hotels. That's a contrast as well, isn't it? Did you ask your ex-colleague Jeremy Clarkson for any advice? Because of course he's doing a similar thing with a farm on a different channel.
Yeah, just because we led that funny life doing that show. I mean, we set out doing the best car show we could, and the next thing you know, you're standing about to go on stage in front of 62,000 people in the Polish National Stadium. We were always a bit blown away by it, but we never took it for granted, and we never thought it was real life. We all just thought, well, this is amazing. Let's do this for as long as we can. Yeah. But we didn't, you know, I didn't lose sight of the fact that I have to go to the supermarket every week and do my washing and make sure I don't forget to tax my car. it's normal life. Nobody really escapes all of normal life.
No. But of course, it wasn't normal. And definitely, it'll be 10 years next year since the crash, which you've mentioned already. So you're traveling at, what, 350 miles an hour?
320. When the tyre blew at the front. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit unfortunate.
Yeah. Do you get flashbacks?
No, I don't get flashbacks as such. It's a big part of my life. It's one of the big incidents in my life. But again, we all have those, don't we? Big moments, first day at school or, yeah, whatever days you get married, well, that's, or have that's, children
that,
or...
That's brilliant, though, that you compare first day at school to the crime. I don't know what that says about anything.
Well, they become a big moment in your life. And I think we all have the choice. And if this sounds trite, excuse me, Ray, but I do mean it sincerely. I do feel nothing has happened to you until you've reacted to it.
Yes.
And you do have control over that reaction. Mm. That gives you control back over your universe. Nothing's happened until you've reacted to it. I remember the decision when I was in recovery from brain injury. I remember staring into the fire and saying out loud, let's make this a good thing. Mm. And did. We always have that choice. It's not always easy.
No.
I'm not saying it's easy to make something good when it's something that you look at it from another direction is terrible, but you can usually find a path to make some good out of it. And I think that's when we have control over our own lives, and it's quite important to do it. And I certainly did it with that crash.
And the important thing is to say it out loud initially. And just because you say it doesn't mean it's going to be the case, but it's a start, isn't it?
Yeah, set yourself a goal. You have the choice to how you react to things.
Yeah. Do you do motivational speaking?
Nah, can't be bothered.
You've been asked.
I couldn't motivate myself to do it. Funny enough, no, not really. No, I don't want a little rummy shuffling in and rambling on. Not interested.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah. And Izzy is features. And Willow, is she younger or older than Izzy?
Willow is younger. And historically, it's always been for her four hooves over four wheels. But she's suddenly showing an interest in it. I'm not encouraging her to go one direction or another. But I think, like a lot of people, you look at cars as an enthusiasm or football or anything else. And you look at all the people who follow it and you think, oh, they know all about it. I can't really join in. But Willow came to one of our, I run Drive Tribe, one of our Drive Tribe live events. And she came along to sell some of her paintings. And I said, well, come along, they'll make you welcome. And everybody made her so welcome. She just had the best day and loved it. And part of it was realizing, oh yeah, I can be part of that. And it's the same with whether it's cars or football or whatever. You need permission, don't you? You need authorization to enter that world. And once you've got that, then you can join in and have a look around and see what bit of it interests you.
Yeah. Drive Tribe is, I watched you and Izzy do the YouTube thing where you interview people in the car. A bit like carpool karaoke, but without the singing. And there is a community, isn't there? Like petrol heads, and you're very much part of that community.
There is a community, and I think it's a growing one because, you know, the car, yes, it's undergoing change and needs to, but that doesn't mean it's going away. It shan't go away because it's the machine that moves us physically and therefore it moves us emotionally. And I think more and more people are realizing that when faced with the prospect, we're told sometimes they might be replaced by an autonomous, anonymous sort of Tupperware box that just turns up. I don't think they ever shall because we adore these things. They enable us to lead our lives. And more people are realizing, yeah, well, well, I could get rid of it, but I like this machine that gives me this independence, that gives me a sense I can go anywhere in the world, that gives me a sense I can demonstrate something about myself, whether it's that I want a cutesy, cheap, modest little car or a big, loud one. It's a language, and more people are realising it's open to them to join in and speak that language.
But I suppose...
So I think it's going to grow.
The problem for some people, I would imagine, in the coming years, and it's probably happening already, is that the message they're sending out about themselves is one that suggests they don't mind harming the planet.
Yeah, that's because the messaging sent by governments around the world is entirely skewed and lacks all the information we need as informed and intelligent consumers to make the biggest decisions we will make around our own contribution to damage to the environment. It is not and never shall be possible for everybody to go battery electric in vehicles. They don't work in all applications. They're brilliant in some. I'd love to be living in a groovy city, driving around in my little electric Renault 5. It's fantastic. Fantastic. It's a brilliant car, but it wouldn't work for me. There are, however, alternatives already provided by engineering, the same engineering that designed and built the car in the first instance.
Well, we hope that we'll be using those more. But probably where somebody's driving a huge tank of a thing around city streets, guzzling, and I'll use that word, I know it's emotive, guzzling fossil fuels, which have been damaging the planet, those days are probably numbered, are they?
No, because that car's probably 50 years old. The carbon footprint of its creation is in the dim and distant past, and it's already lasted 50, 60 years and will last another. Mm. The fuel, yes, has damage. You can run it on a fully synthetic fuel and then it does less damage. And
I suppose two wrongs don't make a right. And if fossil fuel is harmful and if EVs are harmful, well, we should find an alternative to both. That's probably the future. Richard Hammond, thanks so much for talking to us. Workshop is back on Discovery Plus. It's season 5. I really enjoyed that chat. Thanks, Richard.
Ray, an absolute pleasure. Lovely to talk to you. Talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.